Welcome to the Panic Pod. Today's episode is on existential anxiety, a really light-hearted subject that we can explore with you, whatever you're doing, because it's something that people with conventional and disordered anxiety struggle with from time to time. Whether you're frightened that you're some sentient being in a flesh cage floating around on a revolving spherical planet in the middle of the cosmos, and you're wondering why you're sat there doing spreadsheets at your desk, to the very nature of consciousness or whatever itself. This isn't about philosophy, like some of my irate followers said on Instagram. Isn't this just philosophy? Yeah, I mean, they are philosophical questions, but they can provoke anxiety too. Talking about provoking anxiety, Ella Jean,
hello.
My favorite person in the world. We actually did a cut before this, but my mic wasn't working, where I introduced Ella with such superlatives, but now it's just going to seem a bit fake. So,
oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. You were so nice to me in the last one. Wait, just for the listener, let's just do something crazy. I'm going to play that now.
I'm joined by my co-host, Ella Jean.
Hello.
Works magic. This podcast wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Ella Jean.
Oh,
not only
goodness.
with her input, her reflections, her role as the inquisitive co-host, but also producer, idea floater around her. Overall great person. How are you doing, Ella?
I'm great. I'm just the luckiest world. And then people are gonna get to see how nice you can be to me when your mic isn't plugged in properly. That's so good. I just put those two and two together. But existential anxiety, everything that you were just saying there made me feel like I was on a drug that I've never taken, or floating out in the cosmos and experiencing. It made me think of that Rick and Morty cloud song where he was talking about existence, singing like David Bowie.
Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, it's doing that. And I've had plenty in existential conversation. I used to talk about that stuff all the time with my dad, like just like have these really big like philosophical conversations. But what is that in existential anxiety terms? How do you categorize that? How do you know that it's existential anxiety?
Well, existential anxiety is when it does take core philosophical concepts that people have been spoken about for mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of years, but when it provokes anxiety. So the thought mm-hmm. of, you know, common existential worries that we can have are, you know, who am I? What does it mean to be me? What does it mean to be alive? You know, which, okay, you know, if you're a philosopher sat there going, I'd like to answer these questions, it's really nice. But when we're anxious, this can be quite overwhelming. And they can trigger anxiety too. Or it can even trigger kind of disordered anxiety as well as conventional anxiety. It could be about the meaning of life, who we are, our position in the universe, what is the universe, but it also can be narrowed down to what our personal universe is. What is this job? What's the purpose of me? You know, what's the purpose of love? Many existential things. What am I here for? You know, and again, on their own, nice, common philosophical questions. But for some people, it's a bit like, you know, they can go down a few rabbit holes of anxiety and get back on the hamster wheel, and it keeps triggering anxiety. And particularly as well for people who struggle with, do you remember when we were talking about derealization and depersonalization when we feel detached?
Mm-hmm.
When you feel detached, have derealization and depersonalization, and then a side order of existential anxiety, it makes us feel really scared. And that's why I always hear all the time from people, oh my God, am I in a simulation? I watched The Matrix and it freaked me out, stuff like that. And you can understand why. Because if you're experiencing the symptoms of stress and anxiety, and then you have, you know, layered with these anxious/philosophical thoughts, they can become something to fixate on, something to be really concerned about. And I just want to do this episode today to just let people know, that's cool, you're normal. It's all right. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're lying in the bath and thinking about the cosmos and your part in it and we're all made of stars and what's the point, that's really normal. Mm-hmm. You're okay. You're not going bananas. You know, mm-hmm. some people don't think like that. I envy them. Ignorance is bliss. It truly is. Mm-hmm. But actually, no, there's some beauty in existential anxiety. But it depends. Like, what is your existential anxiety? You know, and we'll look at that and I'll explain some of mine. And I'm sure you've got loads, Ella. You know, what's mm-hmm. what does existential anxiety mean to you?
Yeah. It is really interesting thinking about this, especially when you're mentioning derealization and depersonalization, because it feels so much more real and present, and like it's affecting you more when you're already in the throes of maybe the anxiety was triggered by some other response, or your body is stressed for some other reason, and then that's when existential anxiety shows up and kind of amplifies the whole situation. It takes you down a thought hole to try to figure the whole thing out. And so yes. Although we were bringing up this topic, I didn't think that it's something that affected me a ton. I can remember times in my life where I've been anxious for other reasons. I've been stressed out. And then I've started to try to like almost convince the people around me that I'm talking to that like that existential anxiety and the topics around it about like purpose in your life and all that kind of stuff is really important, and I have to figure it out now. Like that's the feeling that I've got a few times. And when you talk about derealization, depersonalization, I can see how this existential anxiety could play into that. Is existential anxiety also thinking about just your own lifespan and purpose on earth and like what work you should be doing, what kind of things you should accomplish in your lifetime? Does that fall under the umbrella of existential anxiety too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I'm glad you said that. I didn't include that. Yeah. It's your personal existence is existential anxiety. Being aware of the natural clock of time, you know, each passing breath is a mm-hmm. slow stomp towards the grave. Sorry. I mean, I want people to keep listening to this podcast. I don't want
That's illustrating the type of thoughts you can have for sure.
Morose kind of statements about, but that is existential. I still think like that, and it sometimes it does free me up because it depends really. Like everyone gets existential anxiety. It's kind of buffered a bit and softened if you're very religious, and that's cool. You know, I find that people who are atheists struggle with existential anxiety a bit more. But you can still struggle with existential anxiety, whether you're religious or not.
Community, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And sometimes that can lead to intrusive thoughts too about questioning faith. Am I a bad person? That's another one. Existential anxiety is moral anxiety too. Like, what does it mean to live an existence that's moral? Mm. You know? It's all under the umbrella of existential anxiety. You know, we could spend hours and days and talking about the different themes and topics, but what I wanted to do in this session is just to let people know that you're not alone. It's completely normal to have those thoughts.
Mm.
You know, I've been stood there and zoned out before, like staring into the horizon. My friend's gone, "You're right." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm just contemplating what existence is, why mm-hmm. I'm here." But here's the thing. Why it's made itself onto the panic pod is that people with disordered anxiety like to seek 100% certainty. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Ella, when someone who wants to gain 100% certainty, what do you think happens when they go down an existential rabbit hole of thinking?
Oh, gosh. Burnout, I can imagine. That's what this has made me think about for sure is that existential anxiety can be what takes your acute anxious response and spins it out into like a day's worth of stress. And I find it such a paradox because the more time you spend worried about existential anxiety, the more time you're taking away from experiencing life. Because like you say, like the healthy amount of ignorance that we all experience in our life to just kind of get on with what we have to do in a day is halted by existential anxiety or thinking about this stuff. And I think it can just take you on a journey that ends up being really unhappy. And that's why I wanted to sort of tie in that I think that this is where anxiety and depression are really related. Existential anxiety, if you start thinking about purpose and you kind of pour your life's energy into thinking about your specific purpose on earth, you know, there's no end in sight for the answer to that. You're not going to find at least a cognitive or like you're not going to find something in your mind that gives you the answer to that.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right how it can intertwine with depression too, when we're looking at our own existence. Yeah, existential anxiety, depression. I'm so glad you brought that up, Ella. They can intertwine. It's basically, when these thoughts are okay. There's nothing wrong with them. Mm-hmm. But when do you think they become a problem?
I guess, like I said, just when they pull you out of experiencing life, like when you're staring off into space, like you say, or experiencing elevated heart rate, sweaty palms, all of the things that go on with anxious response that we've talked about in the past. And those symptoms are holding you back from experiencing a normal life is when I think it goes too far.
Yes, absolutely. And the irony of it is if you go down an existential hole to work something out, even though there's nothing to work out, you actually kind of miss out on life sometimes as well. Mm. So I find that existential anxiety and stuff like that, it falls under the umbrella of rumination. Mm. And we should do an episode on rumination, actually. I think it's a really good idea. Rumination is so... the more I work with anxiety, the more I... talk to people, whether on my Instagram page or clients or whatever, I found that rumination, which is just the process of sitting there going around in circles with troubling thoughts. It just the body reacts to that, usually with a threat response, which keeps you on the hamster wheel of rumination and existential anxiety. But yeah, it's just really common to have existential thoughts. Like, you'll get weird ones. Like, I mean, it reminds me of the philosophers, kind of Jean-Paul Sartre and Camus, when they talk about like absurdism. You know, like Sartre wrote about it a lot, where he was in one of his, I can't remember which book it was, but he dedicates a whole chapter to, he's on a bus and he sits on a chair. And then he's like, what an absurd concept that is, a chair. What a weird thing. What's the purpose of a chair? It's a folded metal for us to fold ourselves on. You know, that's existential thoughts and it's existential anxiety. But of course, if you're having that and you think you're the only person having that and it's freaking you out or whatever, and then you add depersonalization, derealization on top of it, you're going to then start thinking you're a bit weird. Like you've gone into the restricted section and started thinking about stuff that you shouldn't have. But that's okay. And I reiterate again, that is completely, completely normal. You know, I remember my younger years, I used to get high. I don't do it anymore because it's just not worth it. It just saps your productivity. But like I used to get high and look at my hands and go, oh my God, what is a hand? What's the purpose of that? Again, all really normal thoughts. Again, this episode was in response to people requesting it. What are your thoughts a bit on my purpose, the time, the life clock is ticking down, my purpose, etc.? Where do you think people's worries will come from with that?
I mean, from my opinion, I think, oh, that's so perfectly normal. I do it all the time. Stop and think about, am I working hard enough? Am I all those things that you said before, like morality? Am I being a good enough person in what I'm doing? The other day, like, I think like my partner and I've just been watching some heavy documentaries, and like I had a thought the other day thinking about my work and my purpose, and had, I guess, what you could call somewhere between an intrusive thought. But I was also like just in one of those moments where I was like, I wasn't doing other things. I was sort of purposefully allowing myself to have these really deep shadow work type thoughts. And I was like, what if you knew that you were only going to live till 35? What would happen if you knew that you only had 10 years left on this earth? How would that change what you're doing?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
And I guess what happens to me is that people listening to this may or may not have generalized anxiety disorder, which is the body going into a fight or flight response with no sort of trigger. But there's also times and places in our lives when shadow work is what I've heard it called and what I call it, or purposefully taking yourself to an existential place or having existential thoughts, is like something that you allow yourself to do and like cause yourself to do. And I find it's always easier when I've added some sort of mindfulness to that experience too, where I'm going, okay, I'm about to dive into some heavy topics here. Am I physically prepared for that? And if you're on a bus, or if you're doing other work, or if you're sitting around the pub with friends, those are not environments to be then kind of wandering off into your own mind. I find that those situations is usually more when it feels intrusive and not welcome to be having those big, deep, heavy thoughts. But it almost makes those moments easier if I've carved out space and time in my life to have big, heavy existential thoughts when I'm sort of safe. For me, safety, and this is so different for everybody, but for me, safety is like having a journal in front of me where I'm like purposefully diving into these questions, intentionally diving into these questions. Or you have a parent or a friend or a partner that you're like, you have a minute where you think about your life, because those are important questions every once in a while to go like, yeah, I don't feel like I'm passionate about what I'm doing right now. I want to think about that. But I've noticed such a difference between when I've invited that, when I welcomed it in, and times in my life when I've been really unhappy. And sort of the most recent time that like negative existential thoughts have come into my head was like, we moved to London in October at the end of last year. And when I was really struggling with work around like Christmas and January, then there were a couple nights where it was being physically burnt out from work. And then having those thoughts that come in, like, maybe you're doing the completely wrong thing with your life. And it's really scary to think that. And it seeps in when you're sort of most vulnerable and most burnt out and tired. And so I think you can really take a step back and notice the difference between like, the time when it's safe to explore this is that time when I sat down with my journal and had a cup of tea, maybe lit a candle, sit down on my yoga mat, go like, I want to dive into this question. I'm intentionally going here, versus Ella is burnt out. She's stressed that she's not going to get enough work this month. She's freaking out about a bunch of other things. And then the thought of what is my purpose comes in. And I think that's when you have to have people around you to say, like, this is not the time to think about this. This is not the time to go down that hole. I think there's
absolutely
a difference with this.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that. And obviously with the people that we talk to and work with, you've got, I mean, anxiety is, you know, a big umbrella. For people with conventional anxiety, that is perfect. Sit there, lean into those feelings, explore them, what's going on there. And that's all right. If you're in the midst of an anxiety disorder, you've got a different approach. You've got to be a bit like, you've got to almost treat it like intrusive thoughts until you're okay with and confident with your ability to tolerate, acknowledge, and mindfully detach from disordered anxiety. So that's where you've got to empower yourself. If you're listening at home and, yeah, I have these thoughts, whatever. They can be really helpful thoughts to help you get where you want to be in your life, or they can be intrusive to the point where actually you're not getting anything from ruminating on them.
So you know more about people who have that generalized anxiety disorder versus the conventional anxiety. And do you think that what I've just said could apply to people who are feeling conventional anxiety and generalized anxiety, do you think that people with generalized anxiety could still set the scene and mindfully go to those places? Or do you think that it requires like a bit more support, or and how much of that exposure is good for them versus not good for them?
Amazing question. Yes, I do think people with GAD and disordered anxiety, there is a place for that, because do you remember when we talk about the jug? Excessive anxiety comes from when the stress jug builds up. Part of what might have filled that jug up is maybe a lack of purpose in life, maybe a lack of self-esteem, maybe these existential thoughts are worth leaning into, worth tuning into. And when you do that, you can reflect and empty some stress out the jug, because you've given yourself some answers or some guidance. However, and it's a really good question, however, I think when the jug is overflowing, you avoid those questions whatsoever.
Not the time because, to ask it. Yeah.
Because you're not seeing it through the correct lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't know, let's say there's a beautiful sunset and you go and kick me in the groin. And then you kick me in the groin and then I look at the sunset. Am I going to enjoy that sunset? No, my perspective's going to be biased,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because I'm in pain and I'm suffering, mm-hmm. you know? And it's the same. I mean, the groin analogy is probably not the most mature, but
I mean,
I'm sticking with it.
The one that I was thinking of, like, is it good to be drinking on your first or second date? Are you going to skew your perception of that person if you've been drinking, versus just having kind of a sober mindset towards it? That's not really much better than groin analogy.
It's not, is it? With cheap podcast. If you want to listen to some good anxiety podcasts out there, feel free to. Or you could, if you're cheap. Cheap like us, you're more than welcome. You know, yeah.
Go listen to
the Anxiety Guys podcast. Dennis Simsek, life coach, ex tennis player.
But they wouldn't be talking about kicking in the groin or drunk first and second dates now.
Actually, you're only talking of cheap.
But your perception changes based off of your state, or your perception of a situation changes based off your state. So, being burnt out is not the time to be thinking about what is your purpose on this earth.
No, you wouldn't. And when you work, like, you just wouldn't, like, a good analogy. So when I work with people with relationship OCD, is that they try to find 100% certainty 24/7 if they love their partner or whatever, is this the right choice? But why would you ask that question after a long day at work? You're not eating properly and you're stressed, you're burnt out. I mean, nothing's going to be appealing to you right then. And I think that's really important. So it's a lovely topic, this. And we also want to keep it kind of concise, because I think this, the aim again is just to be like, if you're having these thoughts, that's cool. You're not bananas. Well, you might be bananas, but it's nothing to do with these thoughts. It's your relationship with them. Are they... Have you found you're on a hamster wheel that never has an answer and you need to come off it? Or have you found, actually, no, reflecting on this has really drawn me towards somewhere in my life where it's like that I'm making progress? And that applies to all existential thoughts, whether it's existential thoughts about you, your purpose, what you're going to do with your time here, if there's an afterlife, et cetera, or is it even just the big cosmology bombs, like, whoa, what am I? Is there a universe? Is there life out there? Etc., etc. All can influence how you live. For me personally, I used to think about this stuff for years. At university, I was such a loser. I'll give you a personal story how much of a loser I was at my undergrad.
It's before I knew you.
I hosted a stand-up comedy thing, and it went really well because I was addicted to cannabis at the time. And bear in mind, I'm a young lad, full of testosterone. I got off stage at the stand-up comedy thing with my friend Dave, and this group of very beautiful young women said, hey, want to come out to the club with us? Come back to ours. You can, you know, basically we were the best thing since sliced bread. You know, we'd entertain them.
Hard to believe that could ever happen. So just trying to imagine that.
I know. I'm just at a time where people respected me. This is what it's like. And I was that much of a loser. I went home, smoked weed with my friend Dave, and spoke about the cosmos for the 20th time that month. I was like, idiot. I mean, it's fine. I'm here now. I'm quite successful. But like, that's how much of an obsession it became. But here's the thing. I realized one day, I'm not even going to get an answer. Like, it doesn't, like, I'm no better than people having these thoughts than my neighbor who doesn't think about these at all. He's just angry that his other neighbor keeps parking in front of his car, and that's his universe. And I envy that universe, because when he's on his deathbed and I'm on my deathbed, we've got the same amount of answers. I just wasted time worrying about it. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I always go existential because that's how sometimes, but it's your relationship on it. And to be honest, I'll give it 10 minutes, kind of enjoy it. When I start realizing I'm on the hamster wheel again, I'll just treat it like an intrusive thought and just be like, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Notice that it's okay to have them, and then it's okay to realize that the hundreds of years of philosophers before you have written down in books what we can all access, and there's probably nothing that you're going to figure out while you're zoning out doing the dishes on a stressed out Wednesday evening after you've had a lot of stuff on the go. Like, you can let it go. It's not going to affect you.
Definitely, and particularly the anxious folk that go down the route of philosophy. I mean, one of my favorite quotes in philosophy is Soren Kierkegaard, and he says, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. What do you think about that, Ella? I like that. Let's make this podcast more highbrow.
Thank goodness.
Anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. Discuss.
The dizziness of freedom. Wow. What does that make you think of? You just kind of drop that, extrapolate a bit. Tell me a bit more about what that means.
So for me, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. Means that, for example, if I'm in the supermarket and there's only one brand of ketchup, I know which ketchup to get. But if I go into the supermarket and there's 10 brands of ketchup, which there are now, I get anxiety because I have the freedom of choice.
Yes.
You know, I remember doing this. I'm self-employed. I've got the dizziness of freedom to do what the hell I want. On my days off, that sometimes evokes anxiety because I have the freedom to do whatever I want, and it scares the hell out of me. Yet in school, I was less anxious because you had guidance for you. You had all those things. Mm-hmm. So actually, when you have constraints, even in jobs and things you don't like, so it can actually be quite comforting because, according to Kierkegaard, you can actually not, you know, this dizziness of freedom is kind of mapped out for you. And people like having stuff mapped out for them. You know, that's why people are into cosmology. Astrology and stuff like that. Like, when things are mapped out for you, it makes things easier.
Right.
Because when you fully believe that everything is free will or whatever, and unless you're a fatalist and everything's predetermined. Yeah, shut up, shut up, hipster. Go drink your schooner over there. But when
that
you're like,
makes
yeah, it's like
so much sense. I love that. Now I understand that anxiety is a dizziness of freedom, and that, yeah, like, there's so many instances in my life where I can think about that. In music, when you sit down to a blank canvas, it's like paralyzing, and you can get this sort of writer's block when you creatively sit down to do anything, versus like, okay, I have to write a song for this person. I have to practice this, or I have to make a song that sounds like this. It's like that sort of structure can take you to a good place. Probably explains why I was so anxious at the end of high school and the end of university, because you start to think so much about what is my purpose? What path do I want to go down in life? What's next? Oh my gosh, there's so many different options. And that can actually just make you feel really anxious because you have so much there, as opposed to just going, okay, if I had to graph everything out that's going the best and I have the strongest skill set and I take the top one, that's what I'm going with. Like, yeah, it can, I think people who are affected by this will probably agree with me if I say that it comes about at times in life when you have some big decisions to make too.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Really bring it existential
and listeners here will get the Kierkegaard thing sometimes with disorder anxiety, because they actually have, a lot of people are afraid of having time off work.
Yeah.
They dread lying on a beach because they're just, oh my gosh, I'm free to do anything I want with my mind. That terrifies me. Mm-hmm. And then you can go down existential thought loops and thought holes. which again are okay. Mm-hmm. So in summary, existential thinking is normal. That's okay. You know, it's mm-hmm. actually a sign of reflective intelligence. If your relationship with it is okay, then go ask those philosophical thoughts. Mm-hmm. Take them to some highbrow social events. You know, have you thought about what consciousness or whatever? And that's great. But if
you
realize,
to do a podcast on it and get paid for it, just put it at the right time.
Absolutely.
Put it in front of a microphone.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. or you could just be like, treat it like an intrusive thought, like I do. I've been down those holes. I know nothing more. I felt self-righteous for a bit and sanctimonious, and then I realized it's just pointless. People delve into it as a hobby if you want to. It just depends. But if you're anxious, because people listen to the panic pod are anxious, look at your kind of relationship with it, and that's completely okay. Mm-hmm. Ella, here's an example. Let's play the game. I always just do this. I've come to you. I'm having loads of really scary thoughts, Ella, about what is existence, who am I, what is consciousness, what is a voice, what are thoughts, what is memory, what am I without memory, who am I, why am I here? But it's really freaking me out and I can't sleep. What would you say to me?
I'd say that when your body is going through a fight or flight response, it is easy to get attached to thoughts like that and want to find an answer. But the trouble is, with existentialism, we've been studying the meaning of life for ever since humans have been around. And following that hole all the way down isn't going to lead to a resolution. So while it's fine to think about that sort of stuff when you know that you're tethered to reality, it can also happen at the same time as derealization and depersonalization. And those times aren't so fun because you're stressed, you're trying to find an answer to it. You can end up on sort of a hamster wheel of thoughts. And just know that it's okay at a certain point to let those thoughts go and carry on with your life. And if those thoughts are still coming up and bothering you, just consider when you're thinking about them. What state are you in when you're thinking about them? Are you in a comfortable, relaxed, calm state, or are you in an anxious state? And try to flip them once in a while. Next time that you're relaxed, see if you go down the same hole versus when you're just straight up anxious, spinning out. And it's okay to have those thoughts.
His answers like that. I always try and persuade Ella to become a counsellor. She'd be amazing. She could be part of the panic room crew. But she does. She's doing her own things. What an amazing answer that was. Absolutely. I think we should leave it at that, actually. Just drop the mic, walk off.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you very much, Ella. Try not to fall down too many existential holes today.
Thanks for bringing up the topic.
But if you enjoy doing it, then fall down an existential hole. Just depends on your relationship with it, that's all.
Great topic. Thanks for bringing this one up. Yeah. It's great to talk to you again.
Go catch us on Instagram, The Panic Pod, at The Panic Pod. You can catch me, Anxiety Josh. You probably already know that. And go and show Ella of the Net, her page, some love. And find out some more information about her upcoming projects as well with Mystery Planet. My latest book, Untangle Your Anxiety, has become a bestseller in the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, and the United Arab Emirates. So if you want to be cool and buy that book, go for it. I'm also almost finished a book on intrusive thoughts.
You're just churning them out. Genius.
Churning them out. Why not? You know, let's get the information out there. Also, when people buy my book, I can buy shiny things that I can look at, dissociate from, and question my existence about what is materialism and what am I but a consumer. Mm-hmm. But
and end up unhappy anyway.
And then
making
a podcast about it.
If you want to make Josh unhappy, go buy his book.
Don't I'll be a millionaire. I'll be a millionaire soon. I want to make him unhappy. Yeah, I'll buy 10. I'll catch you next time, Ella.
All right. Take care, Josh. Bye.
Bye-bye.